When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome back to Lunch and Rouge Cycling Podcast. LR here with Benji. We've gone to Paris, both of us. We're back in our respective locations. I had a pretty interesting journey, maybe some story time later, back and forth. And we went to Paris for the Tour de France and the Tour de France Femmes avec Zwift route reveals. We have the men's route we're doing now, probably be about an hour. Tomorrow morning, same time, we're recording the Tour de France Femmes avec Zwift route reaction video. So you'll have two long potties to get you through the start of the next week. And we've had no complaints about the in-depth Giro one. So we'll be going in depth today into the men's route, which I would say initial impressions, Benji, just gauging people's reactions on Twitter or DSs or people in the industry. I haven't really seen too many people saying, you know what? What a fantastic route. This has everything I wanted from the route. I think a lot of the most reaction is kind of like, eh, bit meh.
Yeah. I think I've got the same feeling about it. The initial idea was, okay, it's a bit average. Having looked at it again, there's some parts where I'm like, ooh, this is intriguing, but there's some parts where I've gone a bit more downwards with my feeling. So that's what we'll be discussing today when it comes to this parkour. And if we take a look at how this race is brought up, it's a race that once again starts abroad, not in France, Grand Départ in Basque Country. Not in a country that's far away now. So that's at least one advantage in that sense. It's right under France. And then it basically starts heading north in week one towards the Pyrenees. We head through the Massif Central, eventually to the Alps at the end of week two. And I think we go to the Vosges in week three, eventually landing in Paris once again after a pretty long transfer. But throughout the race, limited transfers at all. And that's what the criticism came from people as well. Because like, for months, we've been like seeing people talk about, oh, there should be less transfers in Grand Tours to make sure that it's better for the environment and so forth. And then the second that this parkour was released, the parkour that is mostly in the southern and the western part of France, they were like, okay, well, why is it only in one part of France? Well, if you want small transfers, you're going to stay in a limited part of France, I'm afraid. Or do you think that they could have done the entire tour without transfers?
I think, to be honest, I have no issue. I'm not French. I'm not a mayor of a small French town in Brittany missing out on some tourism in 2023, so I don't give a fuck where they run it. They could run the Tour de France in America for all I care. Probably better for our product commercially if they did so. Because, you know, America's a big market. Anyway, all I care about is the profiles and the routes they put together. So wherever they go to do that, it makes no difference to me. My issue is more with, the one caveat to that is, Benji just said Massif Central, transition stages, a lot of sprint stages throughout. It's hot in the center of France in July, speaking from personal experience, and it's super hot. And that means also not just during the race, they're in hotels that the bring your BYO aircon or fan, I would say. So that's one note to make. It's not like it's rarely blazing hot in Brittany or Normandy or in Denmark, for example. Basque Country is a bit more humid, not scorching. But yeah, that's one caveat I'd make. Is there any other, like, do you care that it's in one location? You're not French, Benji.
I couldn't care less where it is. As long as we've got good climbs, a good parkour, a parkour that I enjoy and that riders can work with. Because while we can criticize a parkour as much as we want, it can still be that a terrible parkour leads to an amazing race just because the riders make it amazing. But that doesn't necessarily make the route amazing. The parkour is still meh Anyway, we'll go into it in a bit. First of all, small intro. I think there's like 6 flat stages, roughly 6 hilly stages, 8 mountain stages, I think 4 of which are mountain finishes, a few of which next to that are basically a climb and a small descent to the line. We're going into it in a bit, and only 1 time trial. But before we head into the stage-by-stage analysis, I'll throw it to you for let's talk about Zwift a bit, eh? Or should I talk about
it? Well, yeah, you're the man who went to the Zwift offices in London because you're somehow Brexit hasn't kept Benji out of the UK. You've been in the UK a lot. What was that all about? I saw you did an FTP test via ramp test, right? You didn't do a 20-minute test or 60-minute test.
Exactly. So for full context, like roughly a year ago, I said to myself, I want to lose 10 to 15 kilograms. And I've been able to achieve more than that, 20 plus now, but I've stagnated a bit the last 2 months. And I want to get that going again. I want to get my fitness level higher. But for that, I want the baseline test to be done to know what my level is at right now. And I didn't have a trainer in the UK, so I decided on my way to Paris to stop by these Zwift offices who were so kind to lend me their Zwift lab. And I did a FTP test, the ramp FTP test. Basically, that means that you've got a 5-minute free ride on your turbo trainer. And after that, it's every single minute, the watts go up 20 watts that you need to keep going. And then you see at which point you start dying on your bike. And that's exactly what happened after a certain period of time. I'm eventually going to make a video about it in the next 2 weeks, so tune in for that a bit later. But yeah, I died on my bike quite a bit. It's like the thing is, what on Zwift you've got this thing called erg mode, and erg mode makes it that you basically can't switch gears while you're doing the ramp tests. The ramp test itself switches your gears along the way and makes the resistance harder and harder to see how much you can get. But at the start, you're like, okay, this is easy. Oh, easy, easy, easy. But by the time you get to the last 3-2 minutes of this test, you are dying to trying. Yeah, you're trying to get those that cadence still going. And oh, I can tell you it was a tough period of time, but I very much enjoyed it. My plan is simple: improve my skills over the coming months, and doing that one by one by upping my skills by climbing more on Zwift and so forth, and doing a few races in real life when it comes to actual rides in real life, not races. Let that be clear. But that's kind of the plan. What's your thoughts on it?
So you've achieved the weight loss goal for 2022 already. So you're transitioning from like weight loss to now trying to get faster.
In some shape or form. In, I'm not aiming to become a rider. I'm not aiming to become a top amateur cyclist or something. I just want to be a bit better at cycling, and I want to make some videos about my journey along the way.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I would encourage people, I think the ramp test on Zwift is the way to go. I remember I used to do 20-minute tests, and then you do some pre-fatiguing, and then you take 95% of your 20-minute value, and then you say that's your FTP. I would question, unless you're a very serious rider, semi-pro, doing a lot of long 60-minute climbs or 20-minute climbs, I would question the validity of the 95% of 20 minutes. And I think the ramp test is pretty good. But bear in mind, sometimes or usually your indoor ramp test or FTP value will be lower than if you did it outdoors. But I think doing a ramp test outdoors is, I don't know how easy that would be, to be honest.
I think so as well. And the factor was also it's more beginner friendly, the ramp test, compared to the FTP test, because you don't have to think about how should I pace these 20 minutes. So that's my thoughts on it. So if you want to do your ramp test to start your baseline level, to know your baseline level before riding a bit more, then hop on Zwift and try it out. I think you can find it on Zwift.com to start your free trial.
Indeed. Anyway, Zwift were at the event as well, I believe, for the Tour de France Femmes Zwift route. But the men's route, as Benji said, we'll now do our stage-by-stage analysis and then a summing up at the end. Okay, let's make some assumptions before we get into this. Pogacar's going. I'm assuming Vingegaard and Roglic go. Wout van Aert, I don't know, 50-50, like in the Giro.
There he goes.
Okay, Benji's declared it. Van der Poel, he has to go because a stage starts from his grandfather, his late grandfather's Binyam. House. Yeah, Binny's going. Okay. Yep. Alaphilippe, Remco, we don't know. And who else is good? Bernal says he'd like to do a grand tour.
Pidcock?
Pidcock will do it. He was at the presentation. Cavendish.
Maybe.
That's up in the air with BNB having cancelled their press conference on Wednesday. So that's, and then we saw a photo on Instagram of Cavendish riding with the Factor bike CEO. So then the Israel rumor started, but then maybe Factor are going to BNB. Who knows? But Cav are wanting to go to this race. And yeah, so they're the main riders that and the assumptions. Anyway, stage one. From Bilbao to Bilbao, they had a beautiful graphic of the dog in front of the Guggenheim Museum. Can recommend. I like Bilbao. And this is a puncher's course. 184.5 Ks, 3.5 K altitude meters gain. And look, it's a little bit easier at the start, but then the last four climbs are 4 Ks, 4.5%. But that's, I think, got a descent in the middle. 4 Ks, 7%. Côte de Vivero, was that in the Vuelta recently? And yeah, then the Côte de Pike, maybe it's PK, maybe it's Pike, 2Ks, 10%. That's quite difficult. And then a descent of 4Ks, then a flattish run into 1K, 5% punch in Bilbao. I think this is clearly goes one of two ways. It is an attack by someone that's not Alaphilippe or MVDP or Wout van Aert on that 2K 10% climb, and they stay away. But I think most likely is an uphill sprint in Bilbao won by Mathieu van der Poel.
Ooh la la, I see it happening, to be honest. Now, one factor that I want to add next to this is that these first two stages are very visibly a factor of the organizers, the Basque Country people trying to make their classics that they have into Tour de France stages, because the Vivera, Alto del Vivera, and also the Circuit di Pigbidea is both from the Circuito di Ghiaccio race. So that combination comes straight from that into a Tour de France stage. So I like seeing that. And I agree that it's most likely to be multiple riders heading over the top of that final climb, what they call the Côte de Pique. And after that, we can see if that works out to be a sprint or whether an Alaphilippe can ride away on that bike video, for example. Because Peak Alaphilippe can do it, but whether we'll see Peak Alaphilippe again is to be decided in the next year, is my opinion. Do you think Peak Alaphilippe can ride away there?
I don't think so. I think it's the first stage. Big teams, trade teams, world champs is 100Ks longer when he, 2021 or 2020 Imola. Fossil Loop was the final climb, though.
Yeah.
Not 10Ks, cresting 10Ks from the finish. So I think it depends on how technical that descent is, too. But it looks a little bit false flat downhill for the first little bit of it, maybe 3Ks. I think the big engines, to be honest, Van Aert and Van der Poel might neutralize each other on that bit. But no, I think it's an uphill sprint. Do you think Binny? This is harder than this finish is 2% harder. It's harder than the Giro finish, which Van der Poel beat him in.
How do
you see him stack? He survives, I agree, but how do you see him stacking up?
I think he's going to be sprinting with the best on this stage. It's also partially built on hope, what I'm saying, but I think it's 80% that I believe he can do it, 20% that I hope he can do it, because it would be cool to see. I think Binyam will probably increase his level a tiny bit towards next year. And I think on this stage, he'll be fighting for the yellow jersey with Van Aert, with a Van der Poel, with a Pogacar, with an Alaphilippe. Those are the names I'm immediately thinking of. Roglic at peak could also be sprinting here for the victory. But Vingegaard is not really the name I shout as the rider that can punch the victory on this stage personally. But he's likely to be up there with a Pogacar if a Pogacar makes a move on the final climb. Anyway,
do you see any GC?
The GC riders will be active just because they want to be in there with the punchers for the stage. So I think that's the aspect there. There might be a few GC riders that are caught off guard, not necessarily caught off guard, but that might have a bad day and lose like 10, 15 seconds or something on the stage?
2K is 10%. Say you get gapped, like, you know, and then the big bunch moves, 15, 20 guys, and Yumbo are leading out Wout or something. Yeah, you could lose 20 seconds. Before Benji previews stage two, I'll just let people know, Circuito de Getxo has been the scene of some of the worst tactics in cycling the past 2 years, from Bora back-to-back years, where they had two riders in a small group and horrendous stuff. So if it's on YouTube, I think the full lives, the streams of those finishes, I'd encourage you to watch in the off-season. But sorry, stage two, Benji.
Yes, stage two is actually fairly similar in the sense that it is also a stage that the Basque organizers made from a classic into a Tour de France stage. It's basically a mini Clásica San Sebastián. Is that a viable explanation, with the Jaizkibel as the final climb, which is in a stage that is in total 211 kilometers long, which, if I'm not mistaken, is the longest stage of this Tour de France. And this final climb is basically topping at around 17K from the finish line, then a descent and a 10-kilometer flat to the line. I don't think the climbs that happened before the Jaizkibel are going to matter at all, so I think Jaizkibel is a decider here. I think we're still at a point in the race where breakaways will not get the lead to win the stage like this. I think this is a peloton stage, and I think it's punchers versus GC riders territory. Will the punchers be able to follow the GC riders? I think the Jaizkibel is not the craziest climb, right? So 8 kilometers, 5.3%. I think a Van Aert should survive this. A Van Der Poel should survive this.
Yep.
Okay. A Binyam should survive this.
Now, this is where the interesting part gets. So there's no Erlite's climb, 4K's 10%, where Remco dropped Yates and San Sebastian this year. It's Jaizkibel's the setup climb, but before Erlite's and Murgil Tontora, which they had in San Sebastian this year, where Vivica paced big group on other direction. This is from the Honda Ribia side, beautiful beach on the French border, back towards San Sebastian. Van Aert, Van Der Poel survive. Jasper Philipsen,
no.
Does he survive?
I don't believe
Michael
it.
Michael Matthews, does he survive? These are, so I think clearly Jakobsen Mollier types should not survive. And the question for me, I think this is a sprint of a group of 30 in San Sebastian, unless like there's a Marc Soler attack. But I just think if you're Alpecin or Jumbo with Wout or Van Der Poel or Intermarché with Binyam, you're locking this stage down. My question mark is which sprinters survive and which don't.
I think it's more leaning towards the punchers than the sprinters in my eyes. And even a Pogacar will be fighting for the stage. And I think we're eager to look at a 20-man group and not necessarily a 30-man group, that kind of stuff, because that's the difference between a versatile sprinter surviving or not. I think this might be made difficult enough to make sure that the versatile sprinters don't survive necessarily. Now, if I do look at this, I'm curious at a Peo Bilbao and so forth. I don't know how technical the descent is, but I'd love to see him do something in Basque Country and try and achieve something here, maybe on the first stage as well. That I do find intriguing. But also next to that, I agree that it's likely not 2-3 riders going to the finish line on this stage. So that basically closes the 2-day start at Basque Country, because the next day we start in Basque Country, but we don't enter, right?
Yeah, so it goes from Spanish to French Basque Country. And yeah, the Jaizkibel descent is technical enough, steep sections towards San Sebastian. But yeah, we go from Amorebieta, Etxano to Bayonne in French Basque Country. Now, this looks like the Jasper Philipsen stage delight, with a 4K, 3.1% climb, 189Ks. I really think Jakobsen or Cavendish or Demar, I think, survives this. He should if he goes. He's sort of sprinter. Do Groenewegen, Mollier, Jakobsen, Cavendish survive this, Benji? They really should. 19 kilometers, 4Ks, 4% from a lumpy finish with some ups and downs.
Hot take? Every sprinter survives.
Probably.
I like 4K, 3-4%. I don't think that's good enough with 20K to go to drop the pure sprinters. Even a Merlier should survive this, or he's in really bad form. But also, who are they going to send? Merlier or Jakobsen? We don't know. I feel like it's more likely to be Jakobsen than Merlier at this point in my life. That's how I see it. So Jakobsen should survive this, as simple as that. And a Pedersen should survive this, obviously. Yeah, I don't see much else on a sprint stage.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's going to be a sprint, and maybe one sprinter in poor shape gets dropped on the steep part of that cote. It's Pedersen might get trekked to pace really hard. Don't be surprised to see that. I think Pedersen in good shape could even survive the Heuskebel and win stage two, actually, if no one launches it. But yeah, I think it's Jasper Philipsen type stage. There's no transition day. Benji and I are going to do, we're going to do odds and evens, but the Tour de France didn't release every stage profile, which I would say in a route reveal is kind of the point, is to release all the stage profiles. So a little bit irritating, frankly. But the stage profiles they didn't release, I am just going to assume they've said they're flat stages. I'm just going to assume they are boring stages, not even worthy of a profile. Is that your approach to it?
Exactly. Stage four is an example of that. Dux to Nogaro, 182 kilometers. And we've got like this tiny profile in like our Tour de France books we got at the Tour de France presentation. But you can barely tell what's happening in the stage itself from that profile. So it looks flat. So I'm going to guess it's flat. And it's going to be for the sprinters again. And that delivers us to the fifth stage. We're not going to do odds and evens anymore. We're just going to do one stage me, one stage you. Paul Larrain. And we've got a stage that I find very intriguing because we've had some history with the stage in the past where this is a copy-paste from 2020 Tour de France Stage 9 where Hirschi was in the breakaway. Yes. I think there was one small addition to it next to the Col de Soudet. Basically, let me go over the profile quickly. 163 kilometers, big difference. Flat for the first 65 kilometers, and then we start the Col de Soudet, which is a 15 kilometer at 7% climb. After that, we've got a valley towards the final, well, there's a small climb there, but the climb that matters is about a solid 20 kilometers from the finish line, Col de Marie Blanc. We've seen that in that stage, stage 9 of the Tour de France 2020. That's a stage where we had Bernal, Roglic, and Pogacar fighting for bonus seconds, and then afterwards chasing Hirschi on the flat section. Landa as well.
Do not silence Mikel Landa 2020 Bahrain. Actually, good performance.
That's true. And we basically saw them crawl back to Hirschi, eventually Pogacar winning the stage in the sprint. But when I look at the parkour, Col de Marie Blanc is a fake news climb. Let that be clear. 9.2 kilometers, 7.7%. The last half of that is really steep. The last 3 kilometers are 12.8, 12.8, 10.7%, while the first two are 3.9, 4.6, and so forth. So considering the last 3K where it's about to go down, despite in 2020 this going to a GC rider, I think this is most likely going to go to a breakaway with a fight in the peloton as well. So a clash on two fronts. Is that how you see it?
This is a message to Romain Bardet. Lose time in the Basque Country, win this stage. Maybe it's too far from the finish. That's the thing. You forget, nah, right?
Part AGC.
Yeah, I guess if you do 22 time trial kilometers, Gaudu and Bardet have to go for GC. If they're ever going to go for Tour de France GC. The reason 2020 might not play out the same way again is that was Roglic underestimating Pogacar. That was Roglic trying to distance all the other GC contenders behind him. And he did, that was the sprint. There was bonus seconds at the top of Col de Marie Blanc. Do not be surprised to see them there again for the first over the top or second over the top. That was when Pogacar looked behind and he nearly crashed into the back of Roglic's wheel. Roglic pulled the lion's share of that flat. He did the entire lead out in the last 1500 to keep the group of, I think, like Bardet, Port, Uran, Quintana behind. He won't do that again. So this might not be as selective as it was in 2020. So I think breakaway. Do I think there can be gaps on 5K, 10.5%? Yeah, sure. Yep. Cold. Which is the climb that McNulty crashed on the descent? Was it Sude or?
I don't remember. Another one.
The one where he went off the side.
Was that not 2021? When he was doing pacing at the front of the peloton for Pogacar and Yellow? I don't know. I don't remember.
Can't remember. Anyway, I think that climb that he did crash in his back. But, yep, break. If you get dropped on Marie Blanc, you're kind of fucked. That means you aren't up to scratch for the race. Maybe you get better because, you know, but there's a lot of climbs like Corne Marie Blanc in this race. So I think if you're getting dropped here, it's a big, big sign of weakness.
That's what I like about this stage is that it's the first like small filter in the race. Next to, of course, we had the first few Basque puncher stages, but this is a proper filter where we will see which riders are really not up to the task to the GC in this race. And I think that's good to settle the score already to see who is in play for the GC. And then afterwards, we can see what's happening on the next couple of stages. But when it comes to stage six, I'm going to throw it back to you because that's a big one, eh?
This stage, I think, has been a little bit underrated. I think even the previous Col du Sude, you know, 15K, 7%. It's a long climb. You can hurt people on a 35-plus minute climb. But this stage six is probably the hardest stage this early in a tour that I can remember for quite a while, unless I'm forgetting something. Having the Col d'Aspin Tourmalet combo, 145K, it's not that long. So it's kind of deceiving. The start is, there's a 2.5K, 6% climb, 30Ks in, and then there's only 55Ks of flat. So let's say an hour and 15 of racing before we're into the three climbs. Aspin's 12K, 6.6%. Already you can thin it. Descent, no flat, then Tourmalet, 17.2K, 7.3% to 2,100 meters with steeper sections at the end, I think, in sort of in the 9% regions. Descent, and okay, there is a valley of 12Ks, but it is only 12Ks. And then they have the Courtrai Cambas climb, which is a stepped climb. It goes 6Ks, 5%. Flatter section, then the final ramps 5K, 7.5%. But even in that climb, the steeper sections before the end, which levels off. So I think there can be real damage on this, especially Benji, when if you have someone like Vingegaard, there's not many climbs, long climbs to make the difference against Pogacar. You kind of got to take what you've got. It doesn't matter. It's on stage six.
Yes, but there is a significant difference, though. I think you agree with this, but I just want to say it, between a stage like this and the Col du Granon stage, for example, this stage does have the Tourmalet, a high mountains climb, as the second last climb. But the final climb is nowhere as difficult as a Col du Granon climb. The gradients are not as steep and so forth. So I think even if you smash this third tree climbs, for example, if we have a start that is rulers trying to get up the road in the first 20 kilometers on the Côte de Caverne, that first uphill falls flat at 6%, so it's more than falls flat. But on that, we've got some climby types like a Geschke and so forth trying to get in breakaways and so forth. Then we get a stronger breakaway. On the Col d'Aspin, we see a certain team take over in the peloton to try and make it hard. We see early action perhaps on the Tourmalet, which I do agree that would be a cool thing to see. But the question there is like, where are they riding towards? Because are they going to drop everybody in the Tourmalet? Should they try? I think yes. And then we see Courtrai, which is not as steep as a Granon, so we likely won't see a Pogacar capitalizing and losing 3 minutes to a Vingegaard on a finish like this. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, because it's like Granon was 11Ks, 9% to 2,400 meters. Completely different ball game. Here, it's just the second last climb is hard. The differences will only be made, if they're big, by teammates up the road as satellite riders or, like a Kuss or Benoit staying in the group and some other rider having a terrible day, or McNulty pulling Tourmalet and dropping and then being able to keep pulling. So say, for example, McNulty has Perigoud shape, he can pull Tourmalet, he drops, let's say he drops Roglic, Vingegaard stays glued to his wheel, he keeps it going, pacing, and in that scenario, Roglic could lose a lot of time. But otherwise, it could, the really terrifying scenario for this stage is there's small gaps on Tourmalet, people sit up, everyone comes back together in the valley, no one gets dropped in the first 6Ks of Courtauld, a couple of people lose 20, 30 seconds on the steep bit, and it's just a group. I think is a very plausible scenario for this stage. I think if you're Movistar with Enric Mas in good shape, well to shape, to Enric Mas, watts per kilo in peak shape is better than Gaudu. It's better than Landa. Mm-hmm. It's better than Carapaz. It's better than those riders. I think you need to be aggressive as well if you're Movistar on this stage to really fight for that podium spot, because Gaudu is much, much better than Mas in the punchy stages normally.
Yeah, I think so as well. Now, the Tourmalet stage will fold the race into a certain place after week one, but so far we haven't had a time trial. So far we had punchy stages on the first section. We had some, like a Mont Blanc stage, which is a medium mountain stage, I would argue, and then a proper mountain stage on the Tourmalet. Who do you think this benefits so far? These few stages we had?
Pogacar. Pogacar, Roglic, Vingegaard is fine. Like, Vingegaard was good in Basque Country. I think he's not bad in punchy stuff. I think the flatter finishes, though, to these punchy stages, like Laurent, for example, suit Pogacar much, much more. I think there's a lot of bonus seconds that will be going to GC riders in these first six stages. I think bonus seconds are going to be crucial for this race, because there might not be huge differences. And like stages 7 and 8, there's no profiles. We're going to say they're sprint stages, transition stages. They are. Okay. Stage 9, 184 Ks, much heralded. There was big applause in the crowd for this stage, which has sort of medium mountain but not that steep before it. It's from Saint-Léonard de Noblat to Puy de Dôme, which is returning to the Tour de France. I don't think spectators can go on it. It's where the road wraps around the it's like a volcano or something. It's a volcano. Okay. But will we see an explosion in the race? I don't think so. Because it's not that hard before. There's actually no probably category 2 even climb before. They're just cat 3s. And then it's a stepped climb. The first 5.5K is 7%. And then there is a flatter section. And then it is 5K is 11%. So similar to Marie Blanc, a little bit harder. In the end, it's 14K is 7.7%. But it's a unipuerto effectively. I think we just see a watts per kilo test on the climb. And a group of 7 guys sprinting.
I think it's going to be more selective than 7 guys at the end of this stage. I think we're going to see the big guns against each other at the end of this. This reminds me as maybe a slightly easier version of Puy-Marie, which we had in 2020, yes, where Roglic and Pogacar were 1v1ing on the steeper sections towards the end. I think we'll see this, but with a Roglic, a Pogacar, a Vingegaard, and perhaps one other rider or something that might pop at that level at that point in the race. But I think this is going to be a bit more selective than 7 guys sprinting, for example. I think it's going to come down to the latter section of this climb. I am looking forward to this stage, not going to lie. Not because of the history that it hasn't been in the Tour de France for, I think, 37 years, the Puy de Dôme climb, and now it returns. I think Poulidor won on Puy de Dôme at some point. I think that was the part of the reason that there was so much hype in France for this to return. But I will say, just the reminder of Puy-Marie makes this intriguing for me. So that's what captivates me. And hey,
what happened on Puy-Marie?
The 1v1 and Bernal cracking and Uran cracking. And Pogacar and Roglic were finishing together, Roglic winning the stage. I thought that was good. I really enjoyed that stage. I don't know. I enjoyed it.
Yeah. Kemna got killed by Martinez. Didn't enjoy that. again, that was Roglic largely pacing for Pogacar because he was happy to. How we see it different on Puy de Dome, I don't know. Like, who's going to pace? I guess if you're UAE, you can't let the break win, right? Because you want to be stacking 10 seconds up for Pogacar over and over again. So if I'm UAE, I don't want the break winning any of these stages, frankly. Because when it comes down to an uphill sprint, Pogacar's the favorite on Puy de Dome. But that's the last stage before the first rest day, where, I don't know, there could be big gaps. Who do you think, do you think it's worth being? I think it's unavoidable being in yellow, Benji, unless you somehow let a Simon Geschke take yellow on the Tourmalet stage. Like, how do you avoid yellow whilst doing your best if you're Pogacar to stack up bonus seconds?
I think trying to give it away on a Tourmalet stage is what I'm looking at as potential opportunities. Or if on the Marie Blanc stage, someone took enough minutes to be still ahead at this point. But that's still going to be difficult to do. So I agree that it's likely to be a GC rider that's in yellow on this day, but maybe they can lose it on stage 10, which is from Vulcania, the first time they go there with the tour, to Issoir, which is a breakaway stage. That's how I look at it. It's just a hilly stage.
Fred Wright.
Potentially. It's like hills throughout, and then the last 10 kilometers are flatter. So what are we thinking when it comes to that? I'm thinking that we just have a breakaway formation phase of 30 kilometers, people trying to form a breakaway, a large break occurs, and then they fight for the stage wins. And I would argue, not only Fred Wright, Van der Poel, Binyon.
Ah, true, yeah, exactly. Like, why try and control this? If you're Pedersen, Binyon, Intermarché, Alpecin controlling this, well, Alpecin don't have the team to control this. So the only option is to get in the break. Mark Hirschi 2020 would have won this solo, but it doesn't exist. Oh, he'll be running for Pog. Yeah, I think breakaway. Lechtersund. DSM got to let Lechtersund go for this stage, I think. I think he could be really good on it. And to be honest, they don't have much else apart from Bardet. But he should not be chained to Bardet, I don't think. Do you see? I mean, I guess there could be some. I wouldn't be surprised if Pog is behind if he tries to make Jumbo nervous at the start. Yeah, it's a transition stage. I don't think too much will happen. Stage 11, they haven't given the profile. We assume it's a flat sprint stage. So we've had at least four sprints to this point before stage 12, which again, 170Ks. This looks a lot like the Conrad Colbrelli-Gaudu stage in the 2021 Tour de France, where everyone won solo. 170Ks, finishing in Belleville en Beaujolais from Roanne. It's, medium mountain, 4Ks, 5%, 4.5Ks, 6%, 6Ks, 6%. That's the order of the day. The last major climb's 5Ks, 7.7%. That's 27Ks from the finish. I think it's a break again, Benji. Like, who's going to control this? Let's assume, because Bike Exchange found an ally in Jumbo Visma to control the breakaway on stage 8 this year, but this is now stage 12. Who's going to help Trek? If I'm Bex, Bling's got to get in the break. After a stage win this year from the break, I think this is break all day with those guys and Bling getting in the break instead of Bike Exchange trying to control, if they've learned from this year's success.
I think so as well. And the formation of the breakaway, that phase of the race will be probably the most fun part of this stage. And then the final, when the breakaway riders are fighting it against each other. That's how I see the stage so far. I agree that Matthews and Sotho should have a teammate trying to get him in the breakaway. Those stopper riders should try and do that. But we'll also see perhaps the likes of a Conrad, but I'm pretty sure that Bora will be going all out for GC in this race and therefore not necessarily have a rider like that in the breakaway in a stage like this. And what names am I also looking at? Is this good enough for Mohoric, or are you thinking that it's not for that?
Yeah, I think so. If it's still a group of five or six after the last climb, he could attack. It's maybe, I don't, the climbs are a little bit long. Yeah. I have Bettiol, it looks really good for him if he did the Tour de France again. So, yeah, I think breakaway. And in terms of GC, 27Ks from the finish, the last climb, it's really tough to make and keep a difference there, I think. So, yeah, on to stage 13, Benji, which is Grand Colombier again.
We've got a stage from Châtillon-sur-Chalaronne, Grand Colombier, as the finish. It's a climb that we've seen quite a few times in the Tour de France in 2020, for example, and also in the Tour de Land that year. Remember that we had the Tour de Land as basically one of the biggest preparation races for the Tour de France in 2020. We had Roglic versus Pogacar on that Grand Colombier, and we also had it in the eventual Tour de France. Was it also in the Dauphiné? Probably not, I would expect. But it is the kind of stage that I'm not thinking that major gaps are going to follow, because the last two times we saw, there were no major gaps. It was the best sprinting against each other in the last kilometer, and it was the tactics in the sprint that decided who the winner was. And if we take a look at this climb very closely, we've got a climb of roughly 17.5 kilometers, and the average is 7.1%. There are some steeper parts in there. We're looking at 12% sections, about 5K in the climb, about halfway the climb. And the last sprint section is also a bit steeper. So I fear that this is a climb where we see Team Space on, and then we see the best GC rider sprinting at the end of the climb. What do you expect?
Yep, that's what's going to happen. I hate these stages. Because if you're going to see GC riders in a sprint, at least I like the Basque stages where there's multiple climbs, there can be more tactics. Like this has got a warm-up climb before, and then it's just going to be, yeah, some pacing. So there's even some flatter sections halfway and then two-thirds the way through Grand Colombier. I think this is where Bernal got dropped, but that's because he got dropped by Van Aert pacing because he was injured in the 2020 Tour de France. So it's not because draft is still important. Yes, the there are steep sections, but they're at the start. I don't know. Again, UAE, though, 10 bonus seconds on offer. That's why I think bonus seconds will be really, really important. Stage 14 is a little bit more interesting to me. 152.5Ks, finishing in Morzin. Unfortunately, it's another descent finish, so this is a harder stage than the Grand Colombier stage, but it doesn't finish uphill. It's from Annemasse. It has the Col du Jupelin as the main feature, but it's a pretty hard stage before, with four medium mountain climbs ranging from 4Ks to 7Ks at 6 to 7% in the first 70Ks. So that's quite difficult, although I think a break will have gone. And then there's the Col de la Ramasse, which is 14K 7%. That's over 30 minutes. And I believe the first part is steeper at about 8%, 9% sections. Then there's Descent, 10K Valley, and Jupelin, which is 12Ks, 8.3%. Has a little false sort of crest and then Descent. This is where Perdun won in his second stage win in the Dauphiné Stage 8 2021 last year. He lost a lot of time on the descent. He dropped Conrad and Martin, I think, in the break. Ineos tried to pace for, can't remember who, Thomas or Port? No, Port. Both. Both. Hague attacked. And then this is the descent, I assume, where Thomas crashed in a hairpin. So, I don't know. It's a great stage for Pogacar, but the descent makes it tough. And the 10K Valley too. So, it's not that conducive to big gaps, I don't think, unless someone's having a terrible day. I think this is break again.
I think a fight on two fronts. We've got a breakaway formation phase that will be pretty mad with the four climbs we have in the first half of the race. I do enjoy seeing that because I noted in our Giro route reaction that a lot of these climbing stages in the Giro didn't have like climbs in the starting spot. So we would have rouleurs right away and not necessarily climbers in the breakaway. Now we'll have a proper breakaway formation phase in this race. So a first great hour of racing. And then the Col de Ramaz, I think that's just a preparation climb, to be honest. If someone wants to take it up in the peloton, that's where they might start pacing to make it a hard stage. And then eventually they might try and do something on the Col de Juplin. And depending on how hard they pace in the peloton, it's either breakaway or peloton. But I'm more leaning towards break, but the way the race has shaped so far at this point in the race can define whether a peloton will be pacing on a stage like this or not. We don't know that yet. That's for when the race is happening. I agree that Juplan's pretty difficult and there's going to be GC action on it, but likely there's not going to be the major gaps with that descent that follows after. Basically, I fully agree with what you were saying so far about this stage. That's how I see the stage, for example. And when we take a look, we're now 14 days in. We're heading towards the final week, and once again, a medium mountain stage follows. And I'm sorry, this medium...
I just want you mentioned the descent neutralizing. I just want to give it an example of why that is the case. Mer de Pegur stage this year in the Tour de France. Jonas Vingegaard's in yellow. He has a 2-minute lead. He has Van Aert up the road. He has Kuss pacing really hard. He doesn't attack on the steep climb with Pogacar.
Yeah.
Not looking that good. Why not? Because descent afterwards, he's in yellow, 2-minute lead, technical sections. Why are you going to try and gain 20 seconds risking crashing if you're in yellow? And so if the yellow jersey won't attack, well then, say Pogacar's in yellow at this point. He's taking all the bonus seconds. I mean, he does like to attack, but is he going to attack on Col du Juplin? It's a lot of effort. Maybe he would. He likes to attack, but the risk reward is so much worse with the descent finish. To gain 15 seconds, you got to hold that for 12Ks. That's why the descent finishes, and the reason we have them is because the finish towns pay money more than the top of an empty hill where no one lives. But that's why. Anyway, sorry, Benji. Stage 15.
Stage 15 is a stage that starts in Leger and finishes in Saint-Gervais on the Mont Blanc, basically. We've got a parkour of 180 kilometers, and the first half of this race is just brake formation and a brake getting a gap. And then in the second half, there's possibility for action in the peloton, where with about 70 kilometers to go, we start the Col de la Coiffure, which is 12 kilometers at 7%. Small descent going straight into the Col des Aravis, which is 4.6 kilometers at 6%. And then we've got a descent that leads into a valley of 12 kilometers, then a descent again, and then we start the final climb. So what I see when it comes to this parkour so far is that we might have people that try and put a satellite rider in the breakaway, and if they're crazy enough, they might try something on the Col de la Coiffure, but I think it's more unlikely to happen on a stage like this. Saint-Gervais Mont Blanc, the final climb, 7.3 kilometers at 7.8%, and when I look at the climb itself, I think it starts off at 11%. We've got it flattening out a bit after a kilometer and a half. And we've got a small descent, and then we start kicking it up again in the last three and a half kilometers, starting off at 11.1%, 9.7%, 6.6%, and 7.5%. So I think this is a Pogacar-style finish. We're saying this a lot, aren't we? A Pogacar-style finish. Because if the peloton goes to the finish here, he's the most likely candidate to take bonus seconds here. So a Jumbo will want a stage like this to go to the break, when the UAE will want the stage like this to go to the peloton. But is UAE going to pace every single day to get every single one of these bonus seconds?
Well, that's the thing, because you've got the Col de la Loze stage on 17 staring down their face. You know, will they be happy with a 20-second lead before the TT in Col de la Loze? Or will they be worried that's where Jumbo could launch a raid, or Jonas could be superior on the longer climb? I think this course also suits Vlasov, who I think appears to be weaker on the longer climbs at top level, but he's a very punchy rider. I think Leonard Kamner type rider will win this from the break, because it's a long time to control 100Ks before the Col de la Coiffure 12K, 7%, yeah, for a serious climb. So I think brake gets a healthy buffer. And then there's like that flat plateau for ages. Like, who is going to want to pace there? So I think brake. And in that sense, if the brake is gone and there's no bonus seconds, does this then the GC group, no one bothers pacing hard? Because why would UAE pace super? I mean, they did on Megève and Morgan stage, absolutely bizarre this year. But I think they won't do that again. And so I think GC, nothing might happen. I hope I'm wrong. But yeah, that's stage 15 before the second and last rest day. I think should be still tight gaps at this point. And that's what the race organizers hope for. And I can see, you know, when Pogačar took the big lead in 2021, it was rather difficult to get people to be interested in the highlight videos of week three. So hopefully we still have small gaps at this point for stage 16. Yes, it's only 22.5Ks of time trialing. And this is the time trial we have from Passé to Combloux. But it's much harder than a 30K flat TT. There's like 600 meters of climbing in this, 650, like 30 meters roughly of climbing per kilometer. First climb is 1.3Ks, 9%. Then sort of step descent, about 8Ks of flat before a 2.7K, 8.9% climb. And then it's a bit flatter, sort of 4% afterwards to the finish. This is a difficult one for bike changes. Because there's the initial climb, but then you've got the 8, 9Ks of flat and false flat after with the descent. So you've actually got 12Ks, can't count, of where the time trial bike will be far superior. And then is the climb long enough or steep enough to merit changing? So that's a really difficult one. I think on balance, this will be TT bikes for the whole time. And I don't care that there's not much time trialing in this tour, to be honest.
I think it's a fair point. I do want to say first, this time trial, having 650 altitude meters in 22 kilometers is the reason that Stefan Kung, Filippo Ganna, and Sethov should avoid this Tour de France like the plague, and should go to the Giro instead, because that will be a good combination with their world ITT as well. And next to that, there's just not that much to work with for them on a race like this. So this time trial is not for flat time trialists. This is for the GC-like time trialists of the world. And we're looking at a Pogačar, a Vingegaard, a Roglic, those type of riders, and Evenepoel if he magically shows up as well on this race. So that's clear. I agree with the bike change. It's pretty odd. Like, 9% would be the gradient at which you say, oh, I'm going to switch to a road bike instead of a time trial bike. But the length of the climbs only being 2.9 kilometers at 9% and so forth makes it that you're starting to doubt. And the fact that there's multiple climbs makes it that you're not going to do multiple bike changes in the same time trial. So it's fascinating. We'll be curious to see what teams will do on this when it comes to those. I think a lot of smart people, smarter than me when it comes to the calculations, will figure that out in their sense. But yeah, what else can we say? Time trial kilometers? What do I say about the 22 kilometer time trial kilometers in the Tour de France 2023? I don't mind it necessarily, because it basically makes it so that the pure climbers have a better chance of podiuming the Tour de France, which I'm fine with, because the best GC riders have similar time trial capabilities anyway. So we're not going to have major gaps in that sense anyway, right?
Exactly. If you have 80Ks of TT, probably there will be some differences between Roglic, Vingegaard, and Pogačar. But all that means is that Mas, Guru, Carapaz, Landa, out. GC done. Like, not even, no one needs to follow their attack ever if you're the top Slovenians in Vingegaard. Thomas is the sort of edge case where Thomas needs those TTKs. So I think it's very clear that Thomas should do the Giro, because Guru is a little bit punchier. So yeah, Remco's the interesting one where you would say, oh, well, he needs the TTKs, but in the Vuelta, he showed he can climb at top level. I think the route and the tour otherwise quite, you know, suits him. I think the Giro, anyway, we'll talk about Remco in a second, who I actually think will, I think Mas could do quite a good TT here. Rodriguez will be interesting to see whether he goes to the tour or Sivakov or Gegenhardt or who Ineos send. Rodriguez?
Yeah, but like so far we've spoken about Rodriguez and so far we've spoken about Pogacar. Ayuso was set to go to the Vuelta alone in 2023. When I look at this parkour, I'm also thinking that Ayuso can podium this Grand Tour.
Yeah, of course. Ayuso is the chosen one. Like, if you didn't see, we've got an article on Lanchon Rouge, which Eurosport Spain put through. They just copied the text, control A, control C, put it in Google Translate, and then put it on their website in Spanish. I guess that's how it works. But it's about Juan Ayuso and how at 19 years old, I don't think there's ever been a climber that good. I definitely don't think, unless there was someone in the 60s that could do those numbers, which I very much doubt. Evenepoel, Uiterhuis, Pogacar at 19 were not doing the same level performance. Remember, Pogacar in the Vuelta 2019 was a year older than Ayuso. So yeah. Let's assume he improves 0.01%. Well, yep, that's pretty good. And so, yeah, I think just sending him to the Vuelta is... I'd be very surprised. But yeah, that's the TT. I think Roglic wins it.
The biggest issue with Ayuso going to the Tour de France would be that his qualities are similar to Pogacar when it comes to the uphill sprint at the end of a climb. Because tactics-wise, what are you going to do? Have them both sprint at the same time? Well, they probably would, but...
Pogacar should lead out Ayuso.
Get out of here. What? I'm not okay with that statement. No.
Ayuso is the one, man.
Nah. He is amazing, but I still think that Pogacar is a level higher at the moment.
What I want is, right, I want Ayuso there. I want Bora to take Uiterhuis. He's their best GC rider. I want Evenepoel there. I want... that child Jumbo just signed, who probably the skier.
Norden Hagen.
Yeah, what is he, 16? He's like turning 18, 17. I think. Yeah, I think UAE send Morgado, the Portuguese man with the porn star mustache.
Herzog.
I just want Herzog. I want all the young talents. I want all the talents there. And then Thomas can clean the Giro. That suits me very fine. So anyway. TT, it means that no Ganna at the Tour de France. That's for damn sure. But Benji, the next stage, the hardest stage of the Tour is stage 17, the last proper high mountain stage and sort of one of 2.5 high mountain stages in the whole race.
Exactly. We have a parkour of 166.5 kilometers on this stage 17, starting in Saint-Gervais-Mont-Blanc, basically where we finished on the Mont Blanc stage 2 days earlier, a stage that goes towards Courchevel, Altiport. Now, that doesn't define much so far, but it's the climbs in between that say a lot. We start off with 11 kilometers of flat, then we start the Col de Saisy, which is 13.5 kilometers, 5.2%. Then the next climb is Cormeilles-Rosellon, 5.9 kilometers, 6.6% is the last part of it, but the full climb is 21 kilometers long of 6.1%. So quite a long climb, attrition going into the legs of the riders, and these first two climbs will be part of the break formation phase of this stage. Second half of the stage, the last 80 kilometers start with another climb, which is the Côte de Longfoy, 6.7 kilometers, 7.5%, a descent with a 2-3 to 5 kilometer valley before we start the biggest climb of this Tour de France. I think that's safe to say. Côte de la Loz, we saw it the first time in 2020, where we saw the likes of Roglic and Lopez drop Pogacar. I think Kuz was also very viable on that stage, Lopez ending up winning that queen stage of that Tour de France. And it basically was a magnificent finish because the last 2 kilometers of this Col de la Loz are incredibly steep. And I think that's what makes it great, next to the fact that it goes up to high altitude, 2,264 meters. But it doesn't end at the top, 27.9 kilometers, 6%, but then it's got a descent of what is it, 5 to 7 kilometers, and then we've got a 1 kilometer, 6.9% ramp into Courchevel. Why don't they finish this damn thing at the top of Col de l'Os? Like,
money. Didn't you hear the Courchevel people in their Courchevel puffer jackets cheering yesterday during this stage review? That's why they do two laps of Courchevel. I think the start of this is also easier than the 2020 Tour de France Col de l'Os. I think the approach is slightly different. They're doing two lap. They go through Courchevel twice. So yeah. I think Rosalind is the descent Mignolet crashed on, not Soudé, which is in this stage here.
Yeah.
There's long valleys between that, though, and the medium mountain Côte de Longfoy. So it should all be Grupo Compact. I think it's going to be group all together with 150Ks to go for the last ramp of 10Ks, 8.7%, and then we'll see. We'll see what happens. I think, yes, it's a descent finish, but it's only 7Ks. And if you've made a significant difference, you have to try. You have to try here. You don't really have any choice. So this is the last really, apart from stage 20, this is the last chance to make big gaps in the high mountains, particularly if you're like an Enric Mas who might come into the race. He gets better in the third week. So, yeah. It's not the best stage I've ever seen, but it's not the worst either. Stuff could happen. Depends on the riders.
I think when I take a look at this parcours, we have the Col de l'Os. The last part of the Col de l'Os is the steepest part. We mentioned it already. The last 5 kilometers is 12.4%, 11.2% and so forth. But I swear there was a 22% section or something in the middle of that somewhere, if my mind serves me right. But that's so hard that people will likely wait until the Col de l'Os to make stuff happen. They might make the race harder beforehand due to attrition, due to riding harder on the climbs before, pacing and so forth. But there's not much to work with to try and launch attacks on people and completely blow up the race beforehand. And that's my fear here with a queen stage like this. I've said it so many times before. I love my queen stages when they've got the second last climb being the major one to high altitude, the last climb being about 8 kilometers or 8 to 12 kilometers at like 10 to 12%. Crans Montagna, for example, Granot, for example, and Alpe d'Huez after a major climb. Those type of stages I love as a queen stage because it forces people or it gives people the opportunity of going on the second last climb. With Col de l'Os basically being the last major climb in this stage, I'm not fucking counting Courchevel, like, let's be honest about that. They're going to wait until Col de l'Os most likely. And That's what I don't like about this parkour. That's what I didn't like about the Fedaya stage in the Giro in 2022. And that's my take on that so far. And I hope that we've got a team that blows it up early. But looking at this parkour, I think it's less likely.
You can't. Like, it's 80Ks from the top of Rosalind to the start of...
Yeah.
The Lowe's climb, and then Lowe's has 4 or 5 Ks recovery in the middle of it. You can't go there. You'll blow your team up. So I think this is the stage of the climb where the famous Mikel Landa face appeared, because Bahrain, to their credit, where he looked at the camera terrified, they paced really hard on the Col de l'Os stage 18, 2022, and the Glière stage as well. It'll be whoever's strongest on Lowe's, they'll attack.
Lopez. And
yeah, maybe. Okay. This is where Vingegaard, I mean, it's not as high as Granol either. This is where Vingegaard will have to try, I guess, if he's behind, or Roglic. Anyway, stage 19, there's no eight. So there's not two mountain stages, proper mountain stages in the last week, by the way. That's the last proper mountain stage on stage 17. Stage 18, which was, remember this year, was Perigord and then Outacam. And then 16 was Tofoa, which is quite hard. 18, we don't have a profile for, and so I think it's just a transition stage. Stage 19 is the Moritz, Pollitt, Sweeney classic transition stage. Not too much to say about it, 170Ks. 20, Benji. This is kind of the substitute last mountain stage, which it is pretty hard.
Yes, that is true. Stage 20 of this Tour de France, Belfort to Le Markstein, you will see that this has some indication that they copy-pasted some parts from the Tour de France final stage of 2022. It starts off with a climb pretty early in the race, Ballon d'Alsace, 11.5 kilometers, 5.3%. It's a shorter stage, 133 kilometers, so don't expect major valleys in between the climbs. And we see that because we've got a small valley before we start. What reminds me of that Vuelta stage, Plataforma de Gredos, because this is not one climb the next 40 kilometers. The next 40 kilometers is basically four smaller climbs following each other up with small descents in between. Very similar to that Plataforma de Gredos stage in the Vuelta at some point in the past. And then we've got a descent of roughly 17 kilometers to the final two climbs of the stage. So we're now with 33 kilometers to go. The final two climbs start Petit Ballon, 9.2 kilometers, 8.2%. Relatively hard climb. So there's still stuff to work with, but you're not going to make the major differences on this climb, for example. Col du Platzerwassel is the next one, which starts with about 15 kilometers to go. And that is 7.1% at 8.3%. 7.1 kilometers at 8.3%. Finish in Le Markstein after a small flat section of roughly 6-7 kilometers to the finish line. So this looks like a medium mountain stage. I think this is their attempt at having a raid stage in this Tour de France. I think there's some opportunities for that, with the first climb being early on to make it hard. There's some platforms to launch on later on, but a strong team should be able to control the stage like this. It's as simple as that. So I think this is a pretty straightforward stage where I don't see the race exploding and GCs already over before the stage.
I disagree. I think these climbs are quite hard. I mean, I know it, Tour de France fam, if you want to see the exact finish of this, it's stage 7 last year. Van Vleuten won by 3.5 minutes. That stage did Ballon and Platzerwassel, and they went through the finish line that we do here on the plateau. I think you remember Col de Peyresoude. That was the same length, 20-minute climb, 22-minute climb. Petit Ballon, I think, is closer to 30-minute climb, maybe 27 minutes. These are 8%, 8.3% with steeper sections, with 5K, 9% sections of Ballon. They're over 20 minutes. I know there is the plateau at the end of 6Ks, but they're long enough to try something, I think. And with McNulty pacing, this reminds me a lot of that Perigord stage, actually, where McNulty just shredded the group, and Bjerg first did it, and then McNulty did it on a parkour that was, I don't think too dissimilar. I think this is beefed up medium mountain plus, plus, plus. It's obviously not the high mountains because we're not in the Alps anymore, we're in the Vosges region, but I think medium mountain, it is, that's maybe underselling it a little bit. I think my problem with it is, like, it's not a substitute for a proper high mountain stage, queen stage, like you said, Benji, which we wanted to see. You know, the Vuelta 20, that had that amazing stage where Bahrain and Ineos went on the attack. Well, that was preceded by, I think, maybe I'm misremembering through rose-tinted glasses, but that had, Lagos de Covadonga in the third week. It had... I have to check because someone's going to be like, no, it was really solid. No, it had Covadonga and Haimonetaeru in the third week. And then they had that crazy medium mountain stage. So we're missing that one. And I don't think this is an adequate substitute for that. But if you're behind, if you've got a strong team, I think you can try here. But yeah, the draft is still important. So.
Satellite riders.
Yeah. Now I'm talking myself out of it. I think if Carapaz is behind on GC, it's the sort of stage he wins from the break easily.
I kind of stick with my initial thoughts here. I think this is not hard enough compared to the Cordelador stage, for example, to do significant differences. And if the riders are still on similar levels, then we won't see major differences here. What does intrigue me on this stage is, like, having the flat part, the last 7 kilometers flat after the climb to Le Markstein, then I'm like, oh, I kind of enjoy that, because if you drop, you still need to pace on the flat for quite a while, and you might lose time if it's a larger group ahead, or you might gain time if you're behind with a larger group. So we might see a nice chase in that final of that race. So that's the only intrigue I see here, next to the opportunity for a raid, but I don't necessarily, I don't know. It's pretty, it's not saying much, this parkour. And you said it, it's not a replacement of a big queen stage and so forth. And we can say what we want about it, but the riders make the race, and they can make this race interesting if they really play their hand towards it. But will the race be in a certain position where there will be intrigue or reason for certain teams to take it on? That's the question the race will answer, and we don't know that yet. But I'm afraid that's my take on this this stage so far. And the last one's pretty simple, right? Champs-Élysées
sprint. Jakobsen, he should have an easier time getting around this course this year. So maybe he won't get a mechanical on the final stage. But yeah, Champs-Élysées final. And then we won't see it for a year. We'll then have the final stage in Nice. I think it's rumored to be in 24 because of the Paris Olympics. So that's the route. I would say the big mountain stages to watch out for, if you really have to say they're must watch, is stage 17, Col de la Loze. That could be a bit boring and a flop if, you know, nothing too much happens. And then
Tourmalet week one?
Tourmalet stage 6. That's it. Two of them. All the rest significantly depend on the attitude of the teams, the GC position, who is back, who is behind, who is ahead. Because they do offer something, but like, yeah, it's really dependent on the team. So it's the Giro parkour. You have those three mountain stages. I mean, and maybe they will disappoint. Maybe they're too hard and nothing will happen. But yeah, I would say I'm not the biggest fan of this route. I think it's really missing an iconic stage. I think you speak to anyone. I was speaking to people before the event yesterday. Everyone wants to speak about Col de Granon stage. People say most beautiful, you know, beautiful stage, or one of the best stages I've seen in a long time. Multiple people said that. I was talking about it. And yet we don't have any stage like that in the Tour. And the thing is, they do these routes. They don't. The Tour de France this year doesn't finish in July, and then they start to make the route for next year. This route was being figured out years ago. So to be honest, this route, and that this is not how they do the routes, but if I'm putting the conspiracy hat on, it looks like a reaction to Alaphilippe's 2019 near victory at the Tour. And they've made it for Julien Alaphilippe GC, which obviously doesn't exist anymore. But remember, 2020 is when this route is getting prepared, 2021.
I'm not necessarily seeing that. I do see the opportunity for an Alaphilippe to take yellow at the first part of this Grand Tour, in that Basque Country stage period. But the likes of Col de la Loze, I wouldn't say that Alaphilippe is going to get destroyed there. So I agree that it's a parkour that leans more towards the riders like a Bardet, a Martin, a Godu, and an Alaphilippe when it comes to GC, having limited time trial kilometers and limited crazy mountain stages to put them on 7 minutes. So that is clear. The issue that I have with this parkour is the final week. The Col de la Loze stage, I've said it multiple times in this podcast already, the major climb needs to be the second last climb to incentivize GC riders to launch early, and you need to have a proper climb afterwards for that damage to actually lead to gaps. That is not the case on this, so it will likely be fought on the Col de la Loze climb. Could be wrong, but that's how I view the parkour at the moment. After that, whoever figured out that two consecutive sprint stage in week three was a good idea deserves to go to jail for 15 years at least. Like, I don't understand the point of that. Entertainment levels are nowhere to be seen, in my view, when it comes to sprint stages in week three. I do agree that a stage 21 and one stage extra next to that would encourage sprinters to stay in the Grand Tour. But adding another one next to that, three sprint stage in the final four stages, come on, guys, like, that's overkill. That's pure overkill. And then stage 20 is not necessarily the stage 20 I want to seeing a ground where it can be fought upon, but I don't see significant differences happening on it. And I agree. Parkour is not really shouting, oh, this is a wonderful parkour. I love it. I look forward to every single stage of these. There's limited amazing mountain stages available. And the parkour's success will heavily depend on what the riders do with it. That's the case all the time. But most of the time, the parkour is at least a bit more likely to result in action than this parkour. And even the Tourmalet stage, major climb, but Col Thérèse a bit meh. Regardless of that, it's still the second most likely stage for notable gaps to happen, which says a lot about this parkour. And I don't know, I'm just a bit disappointed, I'm not going to lie. I saw the parkour initially, I thought, are we missing a few mountain stages? Like, have they forgot something? Then I wormed my way into the preparation of this podcast and I looked at the parkour and I was like, there's some good parts to it. But now, having done the podcast, I'm like, I'm not certain this is the parkour I wanted. And I'm disappointed in the parkour and I hope that the riders make the race, because the Pogacars, the Vanderpools, the Wout van Aerts, the Roglic, the Vingegaards of this world, those are the riders that make races. And we've seen that in recent years, and let's hope they do it again in 2023, because this parkour will need it. Do you agree?
Yeah, I agree with pretty much everything you said there. So yeah, we'll move on. That's the route. The final question we have, I think it's pretty polarized where the TT riders go. I think Demar will come to this Tour de France. But the big question is, will Remco Evenepoel, we saw Lefebvre there in attendance yesterday at the route reveal, will Remco, their world champion at Quickstep, do the Tour de France or the Giro d'Italia? Mixed messaging coming out of there. I think Remco might have said they'd already decided. Lefebvre said we decide in December or January. There's not too many time trial kilometers. I don't think that's the biggest issue. There's lots of time trial kilometers in the Giro, but there's also very, very big high mountain stages in the Giro, and the possibility of bad weather and cold conditions is much, much higher than in the Massif Central in July. Should he do the Giro or the Tour, Benji? Winner of La Vuelta, winner of Liège, winner of Worlds.
Winner of San Sebastian, important when it comes to the Tour de France in 2023, because the first stage is not in Basque Country with a mini San Sebastian stage in there. But that being said, I personally want him at the Giro. And I know this is a controversial topic. Some people want him at the Tour de France, some people want him at the Giro d'Italia. And the reason that the Giro works out, in my opinion, is that one, the time trial kilometers versus the riders that are going to be there. Thomas is likely going to be there. But outside of Thomas, I'm not really seeing riders, GC riders, with major time trial capabilities next to those two that are not the Pogacars, Vingegaards, and the Rogliches of this world that will likely go to the Tour de France. So I see Evenepoel, Thomas as the duo when it comes to GC riders with TT capabilities at the Giro d'Italia. And likely some other riders that will be more the climbing types without that TT capability. And then you start to doubt, where will a Vlasov go? Where will a Hindley go? That's something we have to see. But when it comes to Remco, the Giro parkour, it fits except for the major queen stages. The Crans-Montana stage is a stage that he has not done before, that type of stage. Such a significant level, 5,000 plus altitude meters. The one time that a stage like that was supposed to be in the Giro that he rode, it got basically cancelled with the Pordoi getting out of that race and so forth, and another climb getting out, and eventually we only had Passo Giao in that stage. Now, we also have the same with the Tre Cime di Lavaredo stage, and we notice that because that is also the kind of stage with such significant amount of altitude meters that Remco hasn't done it before. These two stages are the challenges for him at the Giro. And the rest of the parkour fits him, I would say. The rest of the parkour works out. The time trial kilometers can give him an advantage for those harder stages. I think that still is a very viable idea to send him to that Giro d'Italia. His team doesn't need to be as strong as it needs to be at the Tour de France. And on paper, he can definitely compete for the victory at the Giro d'Italia if he shows up. When it comes to the Tour de France, I'm not immediately talking about, can he win the Tour de France? I think he can compete with a Pogacar, Vingegaard and a Roglic on a mountain stage, for example. But can he do so across 3 weeks of a Grand Tour with the fact that they're all good time trialists? So even if the time trial kilometers were there, there wouldn't be a gigantic difference made in them. I think Remco would still take time on the Roglic, on a Pogacar and Sofov in time trials in the Tour de France, but it wouldn't be that significant of a factor. So even if it had 50 kilometers of time trial, I would likely have still pointed to the Giro. The question is more of, do we see him able to win the Giro? I say yes. Do we see him able to win the Tour de France? With a team of Quickstep surrounding him in 2023, I'd say no. And as a consequence, I'd rather see him win the Giro than get third, fourth, or fifth at the Tour de France.
I think Tadej Pogačar was asked for his thoughts on this yesterday, and he said that if he was the world champion, he could not imagine not doing the Tour de France. So, and I agree. I think you don't know how long your peak window is. You're the world champion. This might be a once-in-a-career opportunity to do the Tour de France as world champion in peak condition. And so I think he should do the Tour de France, even though he can win the Giro later. He can win the Giro when he's 30. Tour de France, you don't know how long your peak is. So I think he should do the Tour. I think the Quickstep team is actually okay for this route.
I disagree.
Because they have Alaphilippe, Vivaka. There's not so many big high mountains. They got Van Wilder. I think it's okay. It would be more of a problem if there were loads of big high mountain stages, like Granol stage. I wouldn't expect many of them to be there halfway through Telegraph. So I think it's fine. Basque Country is fine. He can try and win in different ways, being aggressive. So, yeah, I think he should do the Tour because I think third of the Tour is pretty good, actually. And if he loses the Giro, if he doesn't win the Giro, it's a huge underperformance. And if he comes third of the Tour, I think that's fine.
I agree with that statement, but that would... If you don't go to the Giro because you're afraid of losing the Giro, then it's the same as Wout van Aert not going to the ITT because he's afraid of not winning the ITT World Championships before he goes to the road race. I feel like that's the exact same behavior, and I don't like that idea behind it. So you got to have the confidence if you're Remco that you can win the Giro if you show up. I will say I disagree with your Quickstep part because when it comes to the factor of the strength of the team, Alaphilippe has his personal goals. He'll want to try and get yellow in the first 2 days. We have Jakobsen, who will try and be the sprinter in that team, who will likely one day lead out at that race. What is Quickstep going to do? Send their sprinters to the Giro and the Vuelta? They're not going to be okay with that. Like, of course, the sponsor values Remco more. The team should value Remco more. But I think it fits much better in the long-term plans of Quickstep if this year still they have Jakobsen with Alaphilippe at the Tour de France, Remco at the Giro, spread that across the two Grand Tours. Merlier can do whatever is left at this point. And then the year after, you can get rid of one of the sprinters. You can make sure that Remco has a proper team for the Tour de France and go all out there. Alaphilippe, sorry, mate, but you don't fit in those plans to go for your own goals at the Tour de France then anymore. That's how I see that. Do you disagree with that, Dick?
Well, yeah, I mean, why sign Merlier and have Jakobsen if you're not going to send them to the Tour, one of them to the Tour? And yeah, they'll probably, the easiest decision is Remco Giro, sprinter plus Alaphilippe for the Tour de France, try and win 3+ stages. Maybe Alaphilippe can win polka dots on a punchy course like this with few HC climbs. And go for that. That's probably the easiest way. Everyone on the team's happy. But yeah, I just think Remco.
You're not happy.
I'm not happy. No. Well, it also, where does it fit in with World Championships? Remember, World Championships next year is very soon after the Tour de France, before the Vuelta. It's in August. So will people who do the Giro and classics, who then wait for the for Worlds, have an advantage. I don't think Worlds being so soon after will mean that someone like Van der Poel will skip the Tour de France when there's so many suitable stages. And if I'm Wout van Aert and you can't have anything more than co-leadership with Evenepoel at the Worlds course in Glasgow, I don't think you can base your whole season around the Worlds either. So I would send him to the Tour. Evenepoel, you only get so many chances. Bad luck. No one's immune from bad luck. So you got to keep taking at bats. And I think he can take his Giro reps later in his career. Nibali won Giro late in his career, didn't he?
13, yeah, Nibali 16. Won the Giro twice, mate. Come on.
Right. Yeah, he wasn't that
Chima
old.
Di Lavaredo?
He was 32. How old was he? 32 when he won that Giro. It was the last Grand Tour Froome won, wasn't it? So, yep. I'm just looking down the Giro winners in the last 10 years. Contador, Hegedal, Nibali, when he was under 30, Quintana, Contador, 2015, when he was over 30, I think, Nibali, 32, Dumoulin, Froome, 2018, when he was a little bit older, 33, Carapaz, when he was, no, he's not that old, there's been younger guys, so that doesn't fit my theory anymore, Carapaz, Gegenhardt, Bernal Hindley, last four editions been people under 30, I think, so that's no
under
good 20? Theory.
Under
20? Yeah,
or is he 20 so, already?
Yeah. Are you, he's 20 now, he turned it during or after the Welter. But yeah, we'll see. That'll be an emergency pod maybe. Will Cavendish be at the Tour, Benji? And which team will Mark Cavendish be on? And does he break the stage wins record?
You want to argue, actually, if you take a look at the parkour that was made here by ASO for the Tour de France 2023, that it's got 8 sprint stages. That's a lot of sprinting opportunities. That is made for a potential Cavendish breaking that record I don't care at all about, which is the Eddy Merckx stage win record. Like, you would argue that if he finds a team, that they're likely going to have access and he's going to be there. If BNB's there and he's at BNB, then they're going to try and make some kind of sprint train with the riders that they're rumored to have next year, which is Sinkelman, Kisbol of this world, and so forth. So all that could end up being I think this Tour de France could lead to that victory for Mark Cavendish. And we'll see a lot of sprinters that are happy with this parkour. I think DeMar goes to the Tour, like you said.
Yeah. Should Ineos sign Cavendish? I think we'll see how serious Cavendish is about breaking that wins record or whether he wants to just get a big bag of cash and cash in on a good couple of years at Quickstep. I think it's, if you take a discount and go to Bora or Ineos, I mean, Ineos signed Viviani on decent money, I think so. Who knows? But like, what else have Ineos got, Benji? Thomas will do the Giro. Shouldn't Ineos sign Cav and go Cav British All-Stars team, Cavendish, Pitcock, Clock, Hayter, and just try to win stages. Pitcock, it's a pretty good route for him, I think. Try to get top 5 GC or Bora. Should Bora try and sign Cavendish?
I think when it comes to Bora, they've got their idea of the Hindley and Vlasovs of this world and will likely combine that in a Tour de France team in some shape or form. Higita perhaps even could show up at the Tour de France. So I think they're most likely to be going GC-based in that team, and they have their sprinter with Bennett that they're going to try and focus on winning 2 Vuelta stages this year. It might have given them the confidence to try and get him as the main sprinter again for next season. And they still have Van Poppel for that train, so that works out for them. Now, they could sign Cavendish, and they could have him sprint there, but I'm more intrigued by your Ineos idea, to be honest. I do think that Rodriguez is likely going to be at the Tour de France. I would also argue that a Pidcock is destined to be there, that the likes of support for those riders is going to be there. But Viviani is at that team. I don't think he rode a Grand Tour in 2022. So he's not likely to ride a Tour de France again. Will they send them with Thomas to the Giro? I don't really know if Thomas would like that. So there's also that aspect to it. So while I would like the idea for Cavendish to just show up at Ineos and them sending him to the Tour de France with a lead out and them getting the British hype about it, that would be a great storyline, but I don't see it happening.
Probably not. Probably they don't want to pay, you know, what he wants. And I think what's more likely is we'll see him at a team that wants... So Israel, for example, the incentive for them is marketing, of course, but it might make it more likely they get the discretionary invitation from the ASO if they have Cavendish and Froome on the team. And it's not 2013, but that's probably their thinking. And for signing Cavendish, BNB, maybe he's already signed and it's just no one can say anything until the sponsor stuff gets resolved. And they obviously, they don't have an automatic wild card, but they're politically a lock as the only French Pro Conti team not automatically invited to get one of the two discretionary invites. So I think the BNB, I think he's more likely to win a stage on BNB actually. Than on Israel, if that's where he goes. So we'll see where Cavendish ends up, and I think he'll be trying to get the best of both worlds, which is a decent contract and Tour de France access with a half-decent lead-out train. And so, yeah, with all these sprint stages, I would certainly like Cavendish to be there or Sagan to be in good shape because I can't watch Groenewegen, Jakobsen, and Philipsen sprint against each other 8 times and care.
Hope Buhani's there.
Yeah, he was at the presentation. He should be. Quintana's not an RKA anymore, so I would say Buhani should be there. He had bad luck with injuries this year, and yeah, maybe he spices things up. Lecoq, good course for Lecoq, actually. Some of the Basque stages, the third one's quite good for him. Anyway.
We see when it comes to the sprints that the Tour de France went for the more mainstreams. We don't have the Pro Vols for every single one, but based on the rumors, it's relatively flat, the sprint stage, compared to the Giro, who's trying to spice up every sprint stage with a mountain in the middle of the stage. So that's a very big difference between the Giro and the Tour when it comes to those sprint stages. And that's why this race, the Tour de France, will most likely attract those pure sprinters compared to the versatile ones, is what I'd say. So, yeah. Gaviria will not be at this race because Ackermann will not be at this race because Pogacar and Safova are aiming for GC. But yeah, those are my last thoughts on the sprint stages, to be honest. Nothing crazy except for the fact that I am looking forward to the sprint stages. I hope there are straight lines with no corners in the last 200 meters. And we'll see if that happens next Tour de France.
Yep, and we'll see the green jersey points allocation. But I think still probably if Wout van Aert goes for it, he'll be the heavy favorite unless Philipsen has a good strategy. Close.
But pure sprint stages, 8?
It's going to be close. We'll see. Anyway, that was the route recap or reaction. Don't have all the profiles, but we did our best. Let us know down below or on Twitter or wherever at Lantern Rouge CP what you think of the route, what you'd like to see in it. Are you happy with it? And do you agree with our reaction to it? But thanks as always to Zwift for supporting the show and you as well. And we'll see you with the women's recap tomorrow. Ciao.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.